Hello, and welcome to Building Sustainability Podcast. I'm your host, Geoffrey Hart, aka Geoffrey the Natural Builder. Building Sustainability consists of conversations with designers, builders, makers, dreamers, and doers, exploring the wide world of sustainability in the built environment by talking to wonderful people who are doing excellent things. Hello, and welcome to episode 43. This week, we are back talking to Wibbs Colson again. And you might remember Wibbs from episode 26, when we were talking about movement. And we touched on the topic of breathing. And this was something I was keen to return to. So this episode is that. A couple of little points to start with. The ASBP finals happened on Thursday. And I wanted to say a massive congratulations to the Architects Climate Action Network, ACAN, and Retrofit Action for Tomorrow, RAFT. They both took joint honours in the competition. And it was so great to be a finalist, and so great that this little podcast got some recognition. When I looked at the finalists, ACAN and RAFT were the ones that I would have voted for. So it feels good that they won. And they were very much in a different league, I felt, than this podcast. I also received an email. Well, I've been receiving a lot of emails recently, and it's really, really great to hear from you all. But I had one that said that they hoped that I got paid well for the Clayworks episode. And so I just wanted to say that while, yes, I am trying to make this podcast financially sustainable with advertising, my promise to you is that if something is an advert, I will tell you. So I'm not going to get into this influencer model of paid episodes and the like. I get quite a lot of emails from businesses suggesting that their CEO might be a guest on the podcast. And I have to weedle out those that want to contribute to the conversation on sustainability and those that are just looking for free advertising. And so that's quite a common thing for me to do. And I think that Clayworks are doing really excellent work. I think they're really pushing the testing and certifying of clay, which other people aren't doing. And I think they're elevating clay to a higher level. And because of this, I think they're best placed to talk specifics of why clay is beneficial for us, because they have the data. Anyway, I just wanted to stress the integrity of this podcast is really important to me. And so if I'm talking about a thing, it's because I'm interested or because I think it's important, not because I'm being paid. Okay, so this episode, it's another one of the series that is really looking at sustainability of the self, looking after the people who are trying to affect change in the world of the built environment. So at the beginning of this year, 2021, I was suffering quite badly with anxiety, the sort of creeping sort that sits on your chest from the moment you wake up. And I was vaguely aware of the role of breath in aiding anxiety. So I drafted in Wibbs to tell me more. We begin by talking about how our bodies have changed with events such as the agricultural revolution and what that's done to our ability to breathe. There's some talk about the chemistry of breathing. We go on to talk about how to change our breathing, how that's helping athletes and people with health issues, like high blood pressure or anxiety in my case. And we end by talking about Wibbs's new sporting endeavour, which is taking his breath work to, I would say, the extremes. As you'll probably remember from the last time Wibbs was on, there is some adult language in this episode. I'm pretty sure Wibbs hits all of the major food groups of swears, so be warned. And there is also a slightly obscure reference by me about teaching snowboarding that probably no one will understand. Wibbs and I met as snowboard instructors in Canada, so it was relevant to our conversation. Just might not make sense to your listening. So I am back at the end to talk about the work I've been doing with my own breath and the results. And a special treat for you, Mike Hill, who wrote and performed the theme music for Building Sustainability, will be playing out with his new tune. And it's all about breathing. Okay, enjoy Wibbs Course.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Tell me about why breathing is important.
It's kind of important because we'll die without it. So basically, first things first, I'm gonna chuck it out there that I think that you and anyone who listens to this should go and read a book called Breath by James Nestor. For me, it's the best book of last year. A lot of the stuff I kind of knew, but then like there was loads of cool references and stuff to all that stuff, which I maybe didn't really know the absolute sort of papers to and stuff like that. Really, really worth an amazing, it's such a good book, and I've listened to an audiobook like four and a half, five times through. But in that, and this is where I want to kind of go, as a like society and as a human race, we have become awful breathers, like literally the worst breathers on the planet. We are hands down the worst like breathing mammals and animals.
And what about pugs?
Probably 6 1/2 days in the oven, in all fairness, on that one.
Okay.
And some bulldogs, potentially.
Tied with pugs.
Exactly. They're watch a pug awful. Breed. Listen to a pug breed. You're as shit as that, basically. So, essentially, due to... It kind of goes back about 10,000 years to the kind of agricultural revolution. So when we started actually really, really getting into, like, farming grains... and the essentially poor diet that we got from eating grains of like quite processed. So obviously we took the husks off, we ground it down, we made flour, we did all that stuff. All of this stuff began to affect, change how we chewed and how we ate. And obviously, this is not on camera, so, you know, you can see me, but people who listen can't. But essentially, our jaw should be, like, quite forward. We should have quite broad faces as, like, Homo sapiens. But
okay,
we are becoming more and more, like, slack-jawed, essentially. So our jaws are actually recessing backwards in towards our skull. Now, the problem with this is it then... narrows our airway, because the only thing that we can really do is the only space we've got to move into is our airway. So this then narrows our airway, making breathing even harder. Now, again, it started about 10,000 years ago, but it was kind of around the 300 year mark that things really started going belly up. And then because of that, and then obviously we've been processing food more and more, we've been industrializing societies more and more.
So would it have been that like
previously food would have needed more of a chew.
Exactly. So
basically ripping a deer leg.
Yeah, basically. Or even if you're eating like vegetables, but you're probably you're eating like raw food and
right.
So the one of the reasons that because actually I'm go and read the book because you'll get exactly the right numbers and stuff, but you can still, even up to the age of like 70 or something, you can still affect the growth of bone in your face, which is unlike the bone anywhere else. So once bone in your like leg or arm finishes growing, it stops growing, you can't grow it anymore. But in your face you actually can, and there's all these techniques and stuff which these people are coming out with. Mewing is one, and there's another orthodontic bloke, not mooing, mewing. So and then it's
so more like a cat than a cow.
Yes, exactly. and there's other things you can use, and basically there's all sorts of bits and pieces you can do for that. Now that, as I say, kind of coming through to Industrial Revolution stuff, and then the whatever you call the revolution we're on now, kind of computers and, sitting at desks and all that kind of stuff. We've moved so far away from the ability to move efficiently that now the smallest amount of movement makes us out of breath and we start to mouth breathe. So our tolerance to carbon dioxide has got terrible.
Okay.
Now, most people say, well, carbon dioxide is a waste gas. Why do we need that? But actually, it's as important as oxygen to our ability to sustain life. If we didn't have carbon dioxide, we would be fucked. We would not be able to live without carbon dioxide. Going to get slightly technical, I guess. So blood has this stuff called hemoglobin, like a protein called hemoglobin.
Just quick reminder that you're a medical professional.
I am a nurse, yes. I'm not going to say a medical professional. That makes me sound far too professional, but yes, I am a nurse.
just that you're not chatting utter
bollocks. No, I'm actually, I do kind of know what I'm talking about. So you have blood, and in it, there's a protein called hemoglobin. Now, hemoglobin is what oxygen travels around the blood on. So it's like the bus, if you like. Your veins and arteries are your highways. Your hemoglobin is your bus. Your oxygen is your passenger. Now, if you didn't have carbon dioxide, or you don't have enough carbon dioxide, that oxygen will not get off the bus. It will just keep going round and round and round and round and round and round. And you can see, as you put a little SATS probe on your finger, and our oxygen saturations are 97, 98, 99%. Lovely job. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the oxygen is getting out of the blood and into our muscles, into our brain, into our system that we actually need it. So when we exercise or when we do any kind of, I'm a good gesticulator, so any kind of waving of hands, this creates the muscles to work, and the byproduct of a muscle working is it creates carbon dioxide. Now that carbon dioxide then pushes the oxygen out of the hemoglobin and into the muscle. That's just worked.
Right, where it's needed.
Where it's needed. Now, if you don't have enough carbon dioxide, there isn't enough of a push to get the oxygen out of the hemoglobin and into the muscle or the brain or whatever. So because we've become so terrible at tolerating carbon dioxide, and you can, quickly check it really by taking a breath in, take a breath out, hold the breath, pinch your nose perhaps, don't have to. Really exciting audio. But you hold your breath and you see how long you can hold your breath for. Now, if you're just sitting down not doing anything, it's probably still, you're going to be able to hold it for a reasonably long time. But you should be able to hold that breath for at least 40 seconds, realistically, is what you want to be able to do. Now, most people I work with, if they can get to 15 seconds or 20 seconds, that's like really good going.
Right.
So that means that their brain, though, in their neck, in their brain stem, in the arterial system, basically, there's these receptors which kind of go, whoa, 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 too much carbon dioxide. That's going to be bad for me if this level is too much. Let's get it off. And the only way you can get it off is to hyperventilate. And you might not even notice you hyperventilate. This is the strange thing about medicine. I'm going to say medicine because I do think it's that as well. And just general like guidelines today is the normal breath rate is creeping up and up and up and up as to what is normal. So I was reading a book. I can't remember who it was. It wasn't James Nestor, I don't think. It was somebody else. But they were saying how they were chatting to their father-in-law or something, who was a pulmonologist, so like in America, like a respiratory doctor, retired. Mm-hmm. And when he started, the textbook said a normal breath rate should be between like 10 and 16. And they now say between like 16 and 20.
16 and 20 what?
Breaths a minute.
Breaths a minute.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So what is now becoming normal isn't what is healthy.
Yeah. So is that's sort of like what's average rather than what's...
what it should be.
Like the goal.
Yeah, but unfortunately the textbooks now, it's almost like they're changing to be what is average rather than what is we should be going for, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I know as a nurse, like, I'm pretty much certain that I would say 95% of all patients I ever looked after had a respiratory rate of 17, 18, 19, 20, which is it's too fast. Like, really, you should be able to comfortably breathe at 6 breaths a minute for a prolonged period of time, which is a third of what people are breathing at.
And what's like the faster breathing doing then?
So when
it doesn't mean you're just getting too much oxygen. Is that?
Well, no, the problem is, so the faster breathing, it's you can't, people think, well, I need to breathe faster and deeper because I need more oxygen because I feel short of breath. Like if we go back to that oxygen probe again, you can be having an asthmatic attack. Your oxygen levels are still 98%.
Yeah.
The problem.
So is that why the breathing into the bag thing when people are hyperventilating?
Exactly. So when you breathe into a bag, what do? You re-breathe in carbon dioxide. So when you re-breathe in carbon dioxide is a vasodilator, which means it opens blood vessels. Okay, so when you re-breathe carbon dioxide, it helps all the vessels to open, helps all the lungs to open. It basically puts you into more of a parasympathetic state, so it helps things relax and unwind. When you over-breathe, you're kind of getting this, I need to breathe harder and faster because I'm panicking, I've got this, and it's not to do with too little oxygen. It's to do with it's probably being kicked off by your body's sense that there's too much carbon dioxide in your body, but actually you're just really shit at tolerating carbon dioxide, which one of the biggest things I have as a, you know, my job, career, life, whatever the hell it is to, you know, I love this breathing stuff, and it's to try to reteach and educate people that so many conditions come down to an overbreathing situation. I mean, there's even like, there's a whole thing, and I'm not going to go into like the biochemistry of it because there's no need, but basically when you overbreathe, you end up having to buffer. So if you keep blowing off carbon dioxide, your body shouldn't be doing this. And essentially you end up creating bicarbonate, which again, we don't need to go into, but then over time, if you do this for a long period of, like, if you do it for your life, if you do it from the age of 10 to 60, your body is then having to leach calcium out of your bones to bind to the bicarbonate to help. So you end up actually making your bones weaker by overbreathing. And osteoporosis and osteopenia can then come around from overbreathing.
Wow.
Which is like, boom, like mind-blowing, where you think, oh, well, I'm a fairly fit, healthy person, but why have I got osteoporosis? I kind of do this. And maybe you've just been mouth-breathing your whole life.
Because I know I've seen you do loads of stuff on your Instagram about like when you go for a run.
Yeah.
Because I run quite a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm a big old mouth breather.
Do you fill your, if you try and nose breathe, do you just fill your moustache full of snot? If you don't, you're not doing it hard enough yet.
I mean, when I try, because I've like occasionally think about it and I'm like, I should do nose breathing now. And I just feel like I'm going to like pass out.
Die. So that again is your tolerance of carbon dioxide. That's your body going, no. Too much carbon dioxide. Get it out of my system. So this is where you then have to sack the ego off. And then you have to go for brisk-ish walks, run slower, do like interval-y type practice where you like run nasal breathing to, and you just build up. So you just like start nice and gently and you'd like, you know, run at a pace that you can nasal breathe at and just do that to begin with. And then perhaps you build up a little bit and you go a bit faster and then you begin, you can still breathe in through the nose and then out through the mouth. And then slow it back down again and get to the stage where you can then comfortably breathe in and out through your nose. And you can play with, I mean, I use all sorts of tools and bits and pieces, but that's just, if you're still wanting to go out and exercise, that's probably one of the easiest, best ways to do it.
So I guess, that why I've tried it and then like sacked it off is that I wanted that like nice intensity in my running.
But that's the thing. This is where I say the ego has to like, has to take a back step, because you're for a month, 2 months, your times and your whatever else are going to be shit. They're going to be right down. But you are running inefficiently. So you're using so much more energy than you need to. You're burning.
I'm sort of doing it to burn calories. So is that a good thing?
this is the crazy thing. Now, this is, I'm still getting my head around this. So I'm probably going to bastardize the physiology and stuff like that. But essentially, when you're anaerobically exercising, so without the presence of oxygen, you're then burning the sugars in your muscle, the glycogen and stuff like that. When you're aerobically breathing and the presence of oxygen is there, you're then burning fat rather than carbohydrates. So therefore, you can then go longer, more efficiently, your recovery is quicker, and like, yeah, you can just do more, go further, recover quicker, and you burn the fat rather than just the glycogen and the stores that are in your tissues and stuff.
Right. Okay.
So let me find this quote, because I copied it the other day. I saw one of my teachers who mentioned it. So, am I getting the adaptation I want, or am I just suffering better? So this is where, when you run, you get better at doing a distance or whatever else, but it's kind of just like shit and miserable, and you're just kind of, yeah, I can do this, yeah. But it's not like easy, it's not fluid, it's not like efficient. If you can train the adaptation in your body to, and you might find that for a month you're burning less calories because you're not maybe covering the same distance in the same speed or something. But within like a month or two, you would be flying around so much more efficiently, like, and you would be burning a much better fuel source. That would be, I'd just say, back off, slow it down, build it up.
Cool. And you're working with proper athletes and stuff on this, aren't you?
I am, yeah. So
are they all dirty mouth breathers as well?
Like, everyone's a dirty mouth breather. So yeah, so basically they're all dirty mouth breathers. As soon as you give them any kind of stress, you give them like the smallest amount of exercise, mouth drops open, they all start huffing and puffing through their mouth. As soon as you try and get them to close their mouth and like breathe through their nose, like they go bright red, they're like really, really struggling their like output. So one of the lads I was working with at Ipswich Town the other day, he was doing it and his output was like nearly a quarter less than what it normally is. So normally he cycles at about like 120 revs per minute or whatever. And then he was down to about 85, sort of 90. trying to nose breathe. So much, much harder in that stage. But now he's back up to like 110, 15, 20, all nasal breathing and just finding it easier and easier. So
that's cool. Like what sort of duration, how long has he been practicing that?
Probably a month.
Okay. So it's quite a quick turnaround.
You can have a fairly reasonable turnaround time. It doesn't have to be like, you know, it's not, obviously it depends on how much work you put in. You know, I spend my life doing weird breathing stuff. So for me, my adaptations are, actually they're quite slow at the moment, but I'm fairly high up there. Do you know what I mean? Like one of the breathing at things, like I said, that 40 seconds, like hold your breath thing, that's called a Bolt score. And then there's another one called a carbon dioxide tolerance test, which kind of comes from free diving. And you know, they say on that anything over like 80 seconds is like expert elite or whatever. And you know, mine's 90, 95 seconds or something. So
not meaning to show off,
but totally showing off. But you know, it's kind of one of those things that when you get to that level, it's not like I'm going to suddenly be jumping up to 120 seconds, 130 seconds.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're at, you know, a 15 second CO2 tolerance, you've got huge, huge like gains to make. And actually, you know, 10 minutes work a day and you could really, really, you know, change so much. You know, and this kind of comes again back to how you sleep. You know, it'd be really interesting, anyone who listens to this and same with you, like just pay attention to like when you wake up in the morning, do you have a dry mouth? Have you had to wake up to have a drink of water? You know, do you need to get up in the middle of the night and have a pee? all of these things, they're fairly reasonable signs that you're mouth breathing at night. And if you think you sleep for like 8 to 7 to 10 hours a night, potentially, pushing on the 9.5 for me because I go to bed so early, 8:30 these days. I know, what a maniac. But tape, putting the tiniest little bit of tape, so like micropore tape, so surgical tape, tiny little bit of tape just across the lips. It's just enough. It doesn't stop you coughing or like, you know, if you would, don't know why you would suddenly be sick in the night. But do you know what I mean? Like when you're a kid, you can't do it to children because, you know, young kids, because if they do end up being sick or something, they can't. But as an adult, you have the reflexes that it doesn't matter. But it's only such a small bit of tape that it'll easily move. You can still actually breathe in through your mouth around it. But having the tape there, it just pulls your lips together and your kind of just reminds your body to breathe through your nose. And I've used this so many times on people and they're all like, oh my God. Like after maybe 2 or 3 nights, because the first couple, they always pull it off. And you'll do it subconsciously. You'll just pull it off. But after like 2 or 3 nights, maybe, you know, sometimes up to a week, they're just like, change my sleep. Like, can't believe it. I'm sleeping so much better. I'm not, you know, my husband's not snoring since I've been like taping his mouth shut and all that kind of, you know, they're the stories I get, because you suddenly don't get this strong, because if you have your mouth shut and mouth open, if we go back to the start of the conversation, this recession of the jaw, if you just let your jaw hang open, it automatically like hangs down and back. It kind of falls down and back.
So yeah, you can feel it like closing it up.
Yeah. So then again, it narrows the airway. So then there's more turbulent air being drawn down in, because again, your tongue drops back as well. So therefore the air is trying to get around it. You end up with this snoring. You end up hating your husband or wife because they're snoring so loudly. Just take their mouth shut. Not in the...
Sounds like such an aggressive solution, doesn't it?
It does when I say it like that. Just tape their bloody mouth shut. But yeah, you can literally do it with like a tiny inch and a half bit of, you know, Charlie Chaplin moustache sized tape on the lips.
That's my thing for tonight then.
And I'd like to point out that even if you've got a moustache, you can still do it, because I've done it with massive beards and full-on moustaches and you can still do it.
So you just need to
get up out of the way and then way. Just, yeah.
So. All right. Well, it's about time for a trim anyway.
So, yeah.
And what about, because I've been reading a little bit recently about sort of breathing for like mental health and sort of like anxiety and stuff like that.
So again, I've kind of one of my yoga students on my little platform, she's a mental health nurse, and she just sent me a message yesterday saying that she's back in clinical roles and stuff and dealing with people phoning in with mental health crisis and stuff. And she's been using some of my breathing techniques, they're not mine, but that I've been using in class. I've been using her. And, you know, she said these people are just ending up in, like, you know, giggling with her on the phone and stuff like that. And, you know, they phone up kind of overly, completely stressed out, hyperventilating. She uses some of the breathing techniques and they just, you know, 10, 15 minutes later, they're in a much better place. They're much calmer. And again, this comes down to that idea of fight and flight, and rest and digest. When we mouth breathe, when we hyperventilate, when we just over breathe, we push our nervous system into a sympathetic dominant. So sympathetic is fight and flight. I know it sounds like it's quite caring and like should be the nicer one, but actually it comes from, I don't know, Latin or some crap, I don't get, but I can't speak Latin. So it's something to do with that anyway. So the sympathetic nervous system gets overdriven because of that. So then you end up in this perpetual state. And I did an online breathing workshop a while back, and I kind of drew out this little flow sort of circular diagram thing. And you might have had a really traumatic event in your life. So whatever it might have been, do you know what I mean? You could have, might have been from your parents splitting up or abused a kid, or like you got beaten up at school, or, you know, it can be whatever. And that might have been the thing which kind of stressed you out originally. And because it put you into this like fight and flight, upset, very emotional space, you ended up beginning to overbreathe and hyperventilate. And you never probably then relaxed afterwards. So if you never relaxed and I don't mean just like sit on the sofa and watch Netflix. I mean like relaxed, pointing at my dog there. But, you know, if you watch, if you look at an animal, they're like, ah, fun, fun, fun. And then it's like nothing. It's like completely chilled. And that's where we are. As humans, again, this goes back to that worst breathers on the planet, because we can't differentiate between fight and flight and rest and digest. And I mean, when I say we can't differentiate, like we can't automatically do it. We're so bad at automatically doing it. We're really lucky that we're basically the only mammals or any animals on the planet that can take control of it. So I can say to you, just begin to breathe in for a count of four, breathe out for a count of six, and you can deliberately begin to manipulate your automatic nervous system. So it's not completely automatic, but we're also terrible at just letting nature do its thing. We hold on to things. We go onto Instagram. We start tweeting about it. We start we keep retelling that story over and over again, and we can never let our nervous system process it. And so if that's the case, then we end up with this traumatic event happening, pushing us into a sympathetic space, never being able to get over it. This sympathetic space pushes us into breathing too fast. This then means that we blow off carbon dioxide, which then means that minimal exertion, and by exertion, I don't just mean physical, even mental, burns calories. It, like, even just using your brain, like Robert Sapolsky, I don't know if you know, heard of him. He's a primatologist, pretty clever guy. He says that like some chess masters will burn 6,000 calories in a tournament.
Wow.
Because the stress, you know, they're still having to create energy, but it's all through their brain. So even if you're in a stressful situation, you know, you're fed up with the queues in the shop or whatever it is, it puts you in, you create this waste byproduct of carbon dioxide, which then puts you into this, oh my God, my receptors are now saying there's too much because I've been over breathing for 6 months. So therefore, you know, you kind of skip the original, well, you don't even skip it, but that original trauma has then when you start hyperventilating, you almost kind of come back to it and you bring that story back into it. So you can have this vicious cycle, even though you might go and sort this issue out. You go and talk about it with a therapist and all that kind of stuff, and you deal with all of the stuff around it. But because we're terrible at like letting things go and really being able to just relax, we can end up keep retelling the story until we begin to retrain ourselves to tolerate carbon dioxide better, to not let our autonomic nervous system push us into a sympathetic fight and flight place really quickly. And so by using breath work, and, you know, during Movember, I grew a pretty stellar pencil tash, which, by the way, are really difficult. They're really difficult to shave. But I also did some free breathing, like half-hour breathing classes on Instagram around the ideas of breathing and mental health. Now, I'm not saying that breathing is like the savior of all mental health, but unless we kind of deal with psychology and physiology, and we kind of try to not think that psychology is separate from physiology and vice versa, we're never really going to like be able to solve the issues. And with such rampant cases of you know, mental health issues these days, and such rampant cases of you know, overbreathing, poor breath work, and you know, and I'm making this potentially sound like it's you know, a theory and whatever else, but it's really not. I mean, the paper, there's numerous studies and researches and stuff on it. There's a guy called Justin Feinstein from, I don't think he's Stanford, somewhere in America. He's looking at how using carbon dioxide therapy, so you give people with fear, anxiety problems, like doses of high dose carbon dioxide, like 35%.
Right.
And you basically, you train their body to deal with this increased level of carbon dioxide, like a big chunk of it. And you go, I think he's doing it, so you kind of go back weekly or whatever. And those high doses, your body begins to retrain itself to cope with it and adapt to it over time. And therefore, and you know, he's having amazing results, even with some, now was he, I might be wrong here again, with quite who it is, but there's a, I might even just be a historical, but they used to use like CO2 treatment like that for things like schizophrenia and stuff like that as well.
Okay.
So there's a whole, I mean, and there is so much research on it all as well. So you can really like, my life is diving into research papers and just trying to discover as much about it as I can and just grow my own knowledge. Because I think in a world where we're kind of, the health services are all going to go bust because everyone's getting so unhealthy and they can't literally afford the costs. Everyone can do so much for their own health just by breathing better.
Is there some little exercises that people can do like every day or something?
The best one you can do like straight off the bat would be to learn to breathe nasal breathing. So we want to breathe nose breathing. We want to breathe. Mm-hmm. So one of my teachers, Patrick McEwen, Irish guy, his little thing is LSD. Don't take LSD, kids. That's not what I'm saying. But it's to breathe light, slow, and deep. Now, most people, when you say a deep breath, they go, but that is neither light nor slow. So the idea being is you want to be able to breathe almost light enough that you can't feel the air coming into your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to breathe slow. So to begin with, perhaps about 4 seconds inhale. And deep, so we want to bring into the rib. So if you were to put your hands like on your low floating rib, so if you're not sure what you mean by that, if you were to run your fingers down your sternum, down the breastbone, and then you were to find the where the ribs split and you just follow them down to your flank, to the sides of your body. That's kind of
right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then just try to breathe into your hands. And hopefully you'll feel your hands expanding sideways.
Yeah.
Some people won't feel that because they can't actually move their rib cage because they haven't moved it for so long. But it just comes of practice. And again, it's just rewiring of the body. So breathing in for four and out for six, going light, slow and deep. That is, for me, like as a starter, is probably the best thing you can probably do. From there, I guess if you wanted to build it up, and again, this is very dependent on you as a person, and you know, obviously if people come to see me, we kind of figure out exactly what their tolerance and stuff would be. But you know, there's all sorts of ones that people talk about, like a simple box breath of breathing in for four, holding for four, exhaling for four, holding for four. And you could do, you know, five times of that. Now, I would just say, if you're going to try that and 4 seconds, if it makes you like panic, don't do 4 seconds, do 3 seconds. It's like pretty simple. Don't make yourself like worked up and anxious and panicky and like feel horrible because you've tried to do 4 seconds. Just drop the numbers, do 3, 3, 3, yeah. 3, and just get good at that. Get good at breathing in for four and out for six. That whole sleep thing I talked about, where we're taping the mouth and we're keeping the jaw forward so there's less turbulent air. If you make every breath you take, hello, Sting, slower, lighter, then again, there's less turbulence going over the back of the throat. So less chance of snoring, less chance of divorce from snoring.
Nice. I did one of your yoga classes.
Yes.
And it started with a bit of box breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a thing, like when I did my exhale, nice long exhale, I found I kind of got a little bit stuck.
Yeah, like almost like your diaphragm like gets stuck into you.
No, hang on. It was when I breathed in and then held it. To like breathe out again, I almost had to breathe in a little bit to like free it up. It really confused me.
So again, that's going to be kind of a diaphragmatic control issue. So again, it's more the mechanics of your breath. And that does kind of tend to happen as you get better again. So that kind of happens to me, but you know, mine would be at kind of doing 15 second in, 45 second hold type thing. And then when I go to exhale, it's almost like, there is, you've almost got to move the glottis, get the diaphragm to move a little bit. And so the better you get at kind of controlling all the musculature throughout, it gets less and less. But then when your numbers creep up, it kind of comes back. So,
yes. You're sort of doing the more intense thing. It comes back again.
Yeah, yeah.
Like bad technique on a snowboard.
Exactly like that. Exactly.
You let's have to take practicing. It to something steeper. Wicked. So you are putting all of this breathing stuff into what many would probably call like the most extreme practice of freediving.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Mick from the Mick and Pat Show.
That's right, and I'm Pat.
Looking for a podcast that's like catching up with old friends? Well, you're in luck.
We're here to bring you weekly doses of lifestyle commentary, discuss culture and politics, and top it off with the occasional beer and film reviews.
But it's not just about us. We're a community. Our listeners are our kin, and we let you all have a say in what we discuss.
So saddle up and join the conversation at the Mick and Pat Show. You can check out our website or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
I have done, yes, and my plan is definitely to go and do some more this year. I went and spent 10 days freediving in September out in Cyprus, and it was incredible.
I mean, the photos looked unbelievable.
It's,
and I'm sure, like, anyone thinking about this is probably going like, oh, that's probably quite panic-inducing.
There's a lot of people do think that, and I put a lot of these photos on social media, and a lot of people were just like, oh my God, no, oh, that's not a hope. And the weird thing is, and you know, again, this is, I'd like to think it comes back to the yoga, but like just no ego of like, doesn't matter how deep or whatever you go, but it's actually for me, it's probably the most relaxing thing, like the most like meditative, mind clearing, mindful practice you can ever do, because you really don't have another choice. Like, yeah. If you've got, oh man, what am I going to have for tea tonight? Oh God, like, Jeff's supposed to be coming around. I don't like Jeff. Or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, if your mind is busy, you're using more energy to think.
If you're playing chess.
If you're playing chess, you're burning 6,000 calories. You're not going to get very far freediving. But, yeah, so it's kind of like most people are like, no way, not a hope. And, you know, I dived to just shy of 25 meters, which is what, 75 feet-ish? Which is pretty long. It's kind of, I'm not sure how long
that's
a football pitch is.
That's twice the length of my boat. Yeah, that's...
And that's down.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, and it's, yeah, it's just, it's this kind of cool, like, mind game, because your brain begins to, that, so if you, when you do any of these breathing exercises, so if you were to do, let's say, breathe in for 5, hold your breath for 10 and exhale for 10 or something like that, let's say, you might begin to feel like this, oh my God, I need to breathe sensation. And then your body kind of does that when you're underwater at like 15 meters. Or for me, you know, as I was doing it, it was like 15, 17, 18, 20, 22. And you kind of get to the stage and your body goes, nope, 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 turn around, nope. And then in my head, but I'm kind of going, in my head, it's like, I know I can hold my breath longer this because I've only been holding my breath for 25 seconds or something. Now, you know, I'll hold my breath for three and a half minutes. So I know it's not a time thing, but at the same time, man, your body proper shits the bed and it's like, nope, turn around. And then I was finding as soon as I'd flip, so I'd be, rather than head down, head up, my brain and my body goes, ah, no, I'm all right, actually. Nah, we'll go to the surface because we've already spent loads of energy turning around. But yeah, no, I probably could have gone further. So you kind of get this really cool, like, little mind game of dealing with the state and the panic that that breath gives you, which is why, you know, I've kind of, if anyone wants to look, I've got numerous videos up on my Instagram page, which kind of go into depth about some exercise you can do when you're walking to increase your CO2 tolerance. But you kind of get this real like, oh my God, I need to breathe. And I like doing them on land because it's kind of like, it's just training me for when I'm underwater. I can go, no, I can go, you know, I can easily go another few steps. Actually, it's just more, my brain is kind of wanting to kind of alert me to the fact that oxygen, like carbon dioxide, is rising. It's not necessarily the fact of like oxygen's running out. Like I said earlier, it's not the fact that oxygen levels are going down, just carbon dioxide levels are going up. Obviously those free divers who are diving to 90, 100, you know, 150 meters, those guys are going to be getting hypoxic. Those guys are going to be running out of oxygen.
Right.
But diving,
so that, you're sort of getting into a different thing there to do.
Oh yeah. I mean, those guys, once you've been underwater for like, I don't know, I don't know numbers, but you know, if you're diving to those kind of depths, for one, there's a massive increase in nitrogen's beginning to happen. So you'd have to like then decompress, or, you know, go and breathe some canned oxygen stuff to get the nitrogen out. But yeah, by the time if you're holding your breath for that long, that increase in carbon dioxide is again allowing that oxygen to be pulled out of the blood into the tissues. Now, if that's happening, the amount of oxygen you've got in your blood is just diving pretty quick. And then once it gets below about 50, that's when you're kind of likely to pass out. But you don't get a little kick to say, I'm going to pass out. You just pass out, which is the funny thing about the body. We kind of worry about the amount of oxygen we've got, but too much carbon dioxide makes you panic. So you kind of go, I'm going to die. I need some more air.
Yeah.
And then actually that's too much carbon dioxide, too little oxygen. You just pass out. It's just really quite sleepy serene. Time. Yeah. Basically it's real sleepy time. So it's kind of, weird thing of, you kind of think you're going to die because you're running out of oxygen, but actually you're just too much carbon dioxide. And then flip side, you just literally pass out.
So this is, while we've been talking, this has just like cleared something up in my head. So I used to swim all the time as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, would be super happy jumping off stuff and, you know, splashing around. That's a good description of swimming. And then when I stopped swimming, and then when I was probably mid-20s, I went and jumped off some cliffs. And I remember, like, the utter panic at being underwater and that fear that you're saying.
Yeah.
And I thought I must have developed a fear of water or a fear of swimming. And now it's all making sense that I've just, you know, for that time, I'd spent probably 6-7 years working in an office and just being like, not like, I guess, degrading my CO2 tolerance.
Yeah, basically.
So that's actually the thing. And I, since then, I've tried to do regular swimming and would always get like caught up with like the fear of not being able to breathe.
Yeah.
And that panic. Like, so that's actually, I just need to work on my tolerance.
Yeah, and swimming's a great way to do it because you can end up doing like intervals of how many strokes between breaths. So, you know, a comfortable one is probably like 2 or perhaps 4, you know, strokes between every breath you take, depending on what you're doing. Sting again. But you could then
try a thing or two, didn't he?
Sting. He did, didn't he? A thing or two. And then you could perhaps try and do a length of 6 strokes between each breath. And then, you know, this is going to make you really have to work with the amount of carbon dioxide and the amount of oxygen, which is in your, going around in your system.
Cause that's definitely what I wasn't doing. Cause I noticed that there was a connection between, like, as I was getting tired. So like, if I used to go to the Olympic pool, which is bloody long,
50 meters.
It was my local pool. Yeah. And by the end of that, because I wasn't very good at swimming, by the end of that length, I was like tired. And at that point, when I was tired and then trying to hold my breath, that was when the real panic kicked in. And then
So again, if we go back to where we started, and then like, it's much harder when you're swimming. You can't nose breathe when you're swimming. You'll choke and drown. But you can still, like, the more efficient you are with your movement, so the biomechanics of the actual swimming, the more efficient you are with the ability to breathe and to find a really good technique of like breathe, swim, breathe, then you're obviously going to burn a lot less energy. So therefore you'll be able to go further. And then again, that CO2 tolerance, again, it's just driving, you know, the more you're splashing around, as you said, the more splashing around you do, the more the CO2 goes up, the more the panic sets in, the harder it then becomes, which is why with free diving, it's all about like as tidier, smoother, like swim as possible. So you pretty much move your hips and nothing else. So you burn as little carbon dioxide. So you get that CO2 rising as little as possible.
And you've got those sexy old fins on.
Oh yeah. And
you looked great.
What, that night when I went into the swimming pool wearing my James Bond speedos.
Yeah, that is a video that I will treasure.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ah, nice one, Wibbs. I love that guy. So I wanted to second the recommendation of Breath by James Nestor. It's very, very good. I'm about halfway through that now.
And also I wanted to tell you a little bit about how I have taken Wibbs' advice on board. So I started every morning doing 20 minutes of square breathing. So that is, I'd breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds. And then I've been slowly building this up. Within a week, my anxiety had gone from what I would describe as an 8 out of 10, down to about a 4 out of 10. And it's dropped further subsequently. I mean, obviously, it's difficult to know, especially at these times, what is the true cause of the anxiety. There's a lot going on. But I feel like this breath work has definitely helped. I also noticed that as soon as I put on a face mask to go into a supermarket, I resorted to mouth breathing. And suddenly I was very, very conscious of that. And I'd been struggling a little bit every time I went to the supermarket of getting anxiety and finding it very difficult. So to clock that my breathing had changed when I got in there, I don't know if it's cause or effect, but certainly now when I put the face mask on, I think to myself, right, nose breathing. And it seems to help. What else have I been doing? Oh, yes. So I cycle to work every day. And so the day after I spoke to Wibbs, I tried cycling in just breathing through my nose. At first, it was, I mean, there's about 3 or 4 hills on my route, and half of the hills I could get up nose breathing. But yeah, there was a couple that were just too much for me, and I had to resort to like taking in a big gasp. After 2 weeks, I could do the whole ride, but a little bit slower. And now I'm back to normal pace. I have also got used to being a snot machine. It is, it's hard to really prepare yourself for just how much breathing just out of your nose is going to make you a snot machine. What else? Oh yeah, so I also did try taping my mouth at night, and actually found that it seems like I only mouth breathe when I'm active. Apparently, I only snore when I'm ill. But talking to others about this, it seems like it's the number one way to really change your breathing patterns. All in all, I'm a big believer in the way that this nose breathing has really, really helping me out. So I would recommend that people get on it. Maybe start with the James Nestor book and then work from there. Okay, so that's pretty much all for today. If it's your first time here, subscribe and listen to the other episodes. If you go to the Building Sustainability Podcast website, buildingsustainabilitypodcast.com, then you can see all the other episodes and you can group them by topic, so that if you like the self-sustainability ones, you can listen to more of those. Yeah, I think that's it. So as promised, here is Mr. Mike Bitehill, a.k.a. Terabyte MC. He is closing the episode with a tune called Remember to Breathe. Seems fitting, doesn't it? There'll be a link to his work in the show notes. And here's Mike to introduce the track.
Hi everybody, my name's Mike Hill, aka Terabyte MC, and I am a player and maker of music and a developing builder using predominantly natural materials. In fact, I am one of Jeffrey's past students. You're going to be hearing shortly a new track by me. It's called Remember to Breathe, so obviously that is fitting for today's podcast. Speaking of the podcast, big up to Building Sustainability all day, every day, and big ups to its creator, Jeffrey, one of my very good friends. Hope you're doing well, Jeffrey, and sending all of the love to the listeners to this podcast as well. I hope you're all keeping all right. And here's looking forward to a more open and hopefully a more connected summer. Sending all the love in the world, and I hope you enjoy the track. Take care.
that's the fattest rap to smash it like you smashed the tracks. Relax and jump into the fattest stack of fatness. Who planned this? It's randomly happened. I never thought resorted to rapping was something that was really happened. But happened it has. I happened to have the most happening type of rapping that you've happened over is anti-gravity. What's happening? I know we'll have you happy. You're clapping when feet and legs are flapping from the lacking of the forces. The forces to stop still roar. What you're floating for? The boat has called. The boat is remotely flawed. You've soaked the walls. And worst of all, you fit no doors for. What you're gonna do and who you're gonna call when the fellas come crawling? Come crawling, they called it exhaustion. Yeah. My mind's been fine, you carry warnings and cautions. Of course, yeah. And it's flawless, yeah. I'm genuinely yours. Yeah.
Got to remember to breathe, got to remember to make, but to remember to breathe. I got to breathe, got to remember to breathe, got to remember to breathe, but to remember to breathe. What? Got to remember to breathe, got to remember to breathe, got to remember to breathe.
With the very biggest footsteps marching, recharging with fully charged barge harming. Disarming and charming, so no alarm remaining calm. And in the northern fashion, ration remaining slaves of sweaty palms. Get involved with sober psalms and only do you harm. So take from me to use the ether, calm, resolve the charms. Armed with early set alarms, I'm gonna beat that bastard bird to punch the early worm. I'm really gonna do it harm. From the street to the field to the farm. Find me sitting with my mission in my palm. It's a old tradition, people sitting round the fire. There's some words are written, then rehearsed, and then they serve about the kitchen. Which is this? This street sick kid. Listed to write this, I'd like to enlist him. Shit, it's just a flowing through the dome thing. Sitting off a home alone, don't flow thing.
Got to remember to breathe. Got to remember to make, but to remember to breathe. I got breathe. Got to remember to breathe. Got to remember to breathe. Remember to breathe. Remember to breathe. The what? Got to remember to breathe. Got to remember to breathe. Got to breathe. Remember to breathe.
Breathing becomes unnecessary, too heavy to aspire. For my entire life I've admired when I should have been inspired. So the higher I desire to keep firing, applying a fire burn the motherfucking entire lens. Let's flow, no one ever let go, let's go. This next flows another level, no day, no. Say no to payloads with way loads of payloads. They fail though to say so to wait, go my way. So say no, unless it's a yes. Then the rest of suggestions are coming from your best sense. That's when action will actually happen to bring satisfaction, relaxing in fashion. Life flashing through my lashes, and that last breath was everlasting like a passion rapping. We slap words in the verse and rehearse them. It's for certain we serve the verbs with the herb crumb. Our mates are safer than safety. We basically need fatness like pastry mainly. We make dreams from now. We proudly stand out from the crowd as they gather about. Our mates are safer than safety. We basically need fatness like pastry mainly. We bake dreams from now. We proudly stand out from the crowd as a gadabout.
Got to remember to breathe. Got to remember to make, but to remember to breathe. I got breathe. Got to remember to breathe. Got to remember to breathe. Remember to breathe. Remember to breathe. What? Got to remember to breathe. Got to remember to breathe. Got to breathe. Remember to breathe. Got to 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 remember to remember to breathe.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. but you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.